Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. The Summer Language Institute has gotten to be an annual event here at MTSU for rising seventh graders to adults this year, hosted at the University School of Nashville, Tennessee. And the founding mother of it, on this campus at any rate, is Dr. Shelley Thomas of the Department of Foreign Languages and Literature. She's our guest today, and she's going to explain what makes the Summer Language Institute different from a lot of other camps and exercises in which you could have your child participate over the summer, or professional development, for that matter. Welcome, Shelley.
Hi, Jenna. Nice to be here.
Nice to see you again. This is unique in that people may remember taking foreign languages in high school, or they may remember taking it off of some records or tapes, and the methodology that you employ here is probably much, much different than what a lot of people, at least of my generation or older, are accustomed to. Let's start with the technique of total physical response.
Okay.
And what exactly that means.
Okay. Well, total physical response, as it implies, is when you move your body. And you could compare it to learning to ride a bike by sitting on the bike. When we were children, our parents gave us commands. And total physical response tries to recapture how it was to learn the first language. And when your parents gave you commands like take the cup, drink, put on your coat, there was a physical response on the part of the child where the child took the cup or put the coat on. And as the child moved its body, it learned the language physically and auditorily, not intellectually. And so that's what we want to do, is we want to recreate that same situation for learning the second language. And this stage, TPR, involves obviously only concrete objects that you can actually hand to people, that they can touch, or verbs like stand up and sit down and touch that the professor can act out so that the students can imitate. So it's TPR, the first stage, it covers concrete vocabulary, and the student is learning the language as he did the first language. But there's an advantage. A lot of people think it's a disadvantage to be an adult, but because adults already have an entire language, they seem to be learning this even more quickly than the children via this method.
That's rather curious in and of itself, and very intriguing, because you tend to think that as an adult you have more filters, if you will, more firewalls to your learning already inside of you, built up out of necessity, out of stress.
That's right.
Or whatever. The child is more of an empty vessel into which one can pour whatever one thinks it's appropriate to pour.
That's right.
Then why does the adult respond so well?
Well, first of all, it's the teacher's responsibility to explain the method to the adult so that they'll understand what's coming. So the adult is in agreement with the methods that's just about to be used. And then when the teacher has the adult do different things, the adult who has an entire language in his head begins to make comparisons between the new language and his own language. And in that way, he can more quickly assimilate the language than a child can. He actually knows, he can see the differences between the languages and tends to ask more questions after a lesson is through.
What about the emotional context? One tends to learn or absorb something better or on a deeper level of consciousness when it's associated with a positive emotional experience. What do you do to make the Summer Language Institute a non-threatening environment and a positive emotional experience for the people who participate in it?
Good question, because it's very important that what's called the affective filter be down so that they can take in the information that's coming towards them. as we say, we start off by making the students collaborators. We explain to them what the method involves. We do some bonding activities in English so that people can get to know each other better. And a lot of the commands are funny, silly, something that would help them relax. And the teacher as well is very open and willing to experiment, to show students that they can relax and that trial and error is acceptable. One of the things we know from brain research is that when you do trial and error, what goes on in your brain is if you attempt to do something and you find out that it's wrong, you have learned what's wrong, and then you try a different way. And we found out that that's how the brain grows synapses and becomes smarter. It doesn't become smarter by being provided with the answers. So we have to provide a situation in the class that's safe, that's funny, that's positive, and that will allow people to do trial and error so that they can actually experience what are the wrong responses and experience what are the right responses. And their brain does a type of pruning. It will tell them what, you know, oh, that didn't work, so let's try this. If it's all done in an atmosphere of fun and games, then, as we said, the affective filter is down. And we do combine different age groups. As you notice, the adult group will allow some people from 12 up, and they actually help the adults to lower their affective filter more quickly because the younger kids will experiment a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I've heard some parents who are in their classes with their children say that they like having some younger people in the classes.
That's equally intriguing. The TPRS, which stands for Teaching Proficiency Through Reading and Storytelling, is something you would think would be particularly appealing to children because all kids like to either be told a story or to write their own stories. So how does this work with adults? Mm-hmm. Does it take a while to get them to loosen up?
Well, the TPR phase, which is the first phase we take them to, helps them loosen up to this. So after they get through the TPR phase and they learn parts of their body, their clothing, colors, numbers, all through an interactive Simon Says type situation, then we take that concrete vocabulary that they've learned and we string it together with some high-frequency grammatical phrases like, there is a girl, she wants a dog, she goes to, and then we have what is called BEP, bizarre, exaggerated, and personal, and we take those elements and we try to help the students create a story with the teacher that would be funny and would involve some of the vocabulary that we just learned. And what we know from brain research is that narrow and deep is really the way to go. So we just pick those three high-frequency phrases that are abstract. You know, there is abstract, she wants, and let's say to go. What we do is instead of a full body, instead of TPR, we use a hand gesture. It's much like the American Sign Language. So because it doesn't employ our whole body, the chances of remembering it are less than if we used our whole body. But still, if we're using our hands, research shows that hand gestures contribute a lot to keeping things in long-term memory. So we might give those three abstract phrases a hand gesture. And then the teacher would take some props and some students from the from among the student body, and she would, what we call, instead of storytelling, story asking. She would ask the story into creation depending on what the answers of the students would be. And the students are prepped. They're taught that anything goes, that their contributions will be employed in the story. And after the story is told, then they get a chance to, especially the children, to draw the story, to retell the story to partners, to make variations of the same story with, you know, the same vocabulary, of a different story with the same vocabulary. And I think what's missing in other traditional classes is this, are these fun processing activities that keep the information narrow and keep it fun.
I seem to remember from the more traditional classes too a certain amount of finger-wagging negativity if one's subject did not match one's predicate or if one got the verb tense wrong.
Right, yeah.
There is none of that here.
No, because it's based on the parental model. And parents, when their children make mistakes, don't focus on the mistake. They focus on what has successfully been communicated. So once a story is created, and even while the story is being created, the teacher is nothing but a positive reactor to every piece of input that's given, because the teacher must constantly allow the students to make errors but focus on what has been successfully communicated with a positive reaction.
Well, we'll just let that person go to voicemail, I think. Okay. And while that person is tinkling away, let me talk a little bit more about TPRS, because the developer of this, Mr. Blaine Ray, has attended Summer Language Institutes here at MTSU in the past. I remember interviewing him on one occasion. And talk a little bit, if you would, about how he came to think about this and how he came to bring it to fruition, this different technique.
Well, TPR was invented by James J. Asher, a professor, a psychology professor in California. And when Blaine was in teaching Spanish in California, he came to really a wall in his classes. He was trained traditionally, and he didn't really know how to teach his, really engage his students at the high school level. So he read James J. Asher's book. He began using TPR, and because TPR only pertains to concrete vocabulary, he got his students to a certain level of proficiency, but they couldn't get past that. So more or less for as a defense mechanism, in order to entertain his students, he started taking this vocabulary that he had just TPR'd, and he started creating stories out of it. And it became so successful that other teachers asked him how he did it. And so he began to give workshops on it, and someone helped him write a book about it. And I saw him at a professional conference while he was still a teacher in California. And
this is before he even began to go in depth about academic research or
he hasn't done that. No, he, what his part is, he is the creative part of it. He showed that storytelling was successful in a language class, and some other people helped him express it in a book, and he's been giving workshops on it. What happened when I found out about it, because I was a university-trained professor, my area was literary analysis. I wasn't trained in pedagogy. So when I attended his presentation at this professional conference, he gave a demonstration of his method, and I was in the audience. I didn't speak Spanish, but within an hour, I could understand a great deal of Spanish, and I wondered what happened to me. So I decided to look into the area of psycholinguistics, which is studying the brain and how it learns languages. And I did a 3-year internship with Eric Jensen, who is famous in the United States for bringing hardcore brain research and the studies in neurology to different disciplines, and teaching teachers how they can teach their subject in a brain-compatible way so that students in the class will, their affective filter will go down, they'll put things in long-term memory. And what I did was I brought together Eric Jensen and brain-based learning, Blaine Ray and TPRS and Asher, with TPR, and I combined them in the Language Institute. And I also created a graduate course that teachers can take in our master's program for credit on TPR and TPRS and Eric Jensen.
So lest people think that this is some fly-by-night innovation, it has, since its creation, been backed up by solid academic research and credibility.
I would say that TPR, since it was started in 60, has credible research. But TPR, since it's so new, TPRS, excuse me, and since it was practiced at the high school level, it hasn't really reached the universities. MTSU is the only university that I know of that is putting forth grant money towards research on TPRS. I've recently got a synergy grant which combines what I'm doing with two other professors, one in the Department of Psychology and one in Educational Research. We got a grant for $40,000 to look at TPR and TPRS and to experiment with them in both the classroom and in the laboratory. Dr. Will Langston is in psychology, and Dr. Rebecca Watts is in educational research. And really, MTSU is on the cutting edge of any research that will be coming forth on TPRS.
And the research in the classroom, will this be in a K-12 classroom or a college classroom?
The research is currently being conducted in labs here at MTSU and in two of my colleagues' classes who became a part of the Synergy Grant. Each year, two colleagues are going to partner with me. They're going to observe me, learn how to do it, and then teach using TPR and TPRS in their own classes, and we are gathering research from their classes.
Is there any indication from your experiences with the Summer Language Institute that the methodology necessarily works any better or any worse with, say, the language romances, French, Portuguese, Italian, and Spanish, than it does with Asian languages or vice versa?
Well, the interesting thing is Dr. Asher initially experienced TPR when one of his Japanese graduate teaching assistants used it on him. So it is occurring in all languages at this moment around the world. It's just that each language needs to figure out how best to manipulate it. So it does work. I just spent 3 months in India where I was asked to come and train teachers who speak Tamil and Hindi. And, of course, I speak neither of those. And I taught them the methods, and they worked on putting the method into practice in their own language and did TPR on me and several other people that were at the institute where I had this workshop. So it can work in any language because it's brain-based. It's based on the principle of memory is circulating throughout our whole body, and we need to be using our whole body, as many senses as possible, in order to learn. And I would say not only languages, but this applies to all learning. And I think most people would agree that if they practice what they're learning with a hands-on experience, they tend to be more motivated about it and remember it better.
Can people practice it by themselves, or do they need a facilitator, someone to sort of guide the experience?
Because it's based on the parent model, yes, you'd need somebody to be the parent. And actually, the more people that are in the class, the better, because we need lots of repetition in order to get things into long-term memory. Research shows we need about 80 repetitions, and that's difficult to get without boring somebody. So you've got to provide lots of different contexts, a variety of contexts. It has to be real and happening right now, and you get that by having a lot of different people in class and getting the opportunity to use them as kind of props.
But when you're away from the class and you'd like to reinforce what you've been learning in the class, it doesn't seem like it's something that you could, rehearse as a solitary endeavor.
Once you go through, let's say, a TPR exercise, the best thing to do would be to watch it, to rewatch it. And I've started recording myself and putting it on a website so that people can actually watch it. Actually, the the first class I ever taught in the graduate program for FL6900, I recorded myself teaching using these methods, a 1010 class at MTSU. And as my students watched that on local TV in Murfreesboro, not only they watched it, but I noticed local people in, that worked in the community watched it, and they would approach me, let's say, in a restaurant and look at me and say, "Are you the teacher that teaches on TV?" And they would say, "I've been watching you on TV and learning French." So that told me this was something that needs to be developed.
And can it be utilized then? Does that experience tell you that it can be utilized as a teaching tool via television, via even distance learning, if one can participate in a telecommunications type hookup?
Yes, this is the way to go. It's just a matter of getting the money and the resources and the place to record. And it's I've gotten so much feedback just from that one course that was on TV. I know this is the way to go. Yeah.
What about the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures itself? Is TPRS standard across the board?
No, so few teachers know how to do it. It didn't come from the top down. It wasn't started in a university. I asked Dr. Asher once, who is very open to questions. I just called him at his home one day when I finished reading his book, and I said, why wasn't it picked up immediately in California in the 60s when you came upon it? And he said, well, you got to realize I was in the psychology department. I was not in the foreign languages department. And university professors tend not to take on things or just, you know, they want it to be supported by research. And it's a lot of times hard for different departments to read each other's research. Mm-hmm. If you're in the department of, let's say, political science, you don't tend to read research that's in other departments unless it serves a purpose for your research.
Right.
So this was not picked up by the university. It was picked up by some high school teachers.
Is it difficult to get TPRS integrated into a K-12 system, given the bureaucracy and the politics, having to go through the school board, getting the curriculum approved, and then, of course, the state has to weigh in and, mm-hmm. and so forth?
Well, it's odd because what seems to be happening is the more teachers ask for things to change, if they see that TPRS is working and they ask their school administrators to allow them to use it, this information is getting to the textbook people, and already several textbooks, Heinle and Heinle included, have started to have ancillary materials where they add TPRS stories to their already traditional textbook.
I see here on looking, I had to take off my glasses just in order to be able to see, but the dates for this year's Summer Language Institute are June 16th through the 20th for the first session.
That's right.
And then that's for the early morning 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. session. And then from the 16th through the 19th, there's a 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. session.
Yeah, the morning session is to learn the language. Mm-hmm. The afternoon session is to actually learn the methods. Frequently, we have a lot of language teachers that would like to come to the Language Institute to experience what these methods are like by taking a language they don't know. Mm-hmm. And then they see what it feels like, and then they want to learn how to do it. So we give them the afternoon. We talk to them. I'll be showing the same films that I show in my graduate class, and we'll be coaching them in TPR and TPRS.
And then there is session two from June 23rd through 27th from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. and the 23rd through the 26th from 2 to 5. And then session three is Spanish level one, and that's just from July 28th through August 1st from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. I was going to ask you about Arabic and Hebrew since
yes.
they've recently been added to foreign languages and literatures here at MTSU. What's the experience with TPRS in Arabic and Hebrew?
Well, as I said before, really no university professors know these techniques. I'm hiring people from outside the university until my colleagues learn it, who would like to. there are very few people trained in TPR and TPRS and Arabic. And you'll notice that this summer I'm offering Mandarin, Arabic, Gaelic, Spanish, German, French. And I've had to really scour the world to try to get the teachers who are highly trained. They have been teaching for me. Most of these teachers have been teaching for me for the past 6 years.
Is the Gaelic new? I haven't seen that before.
The Gaelic is new, but it's one of my former students. I had Jason about 10 years ago, and he went on to become a French teacher. And all that while, and I taught him the methods, he's been teaching himself Gaelic. Wow. To such a degree that he even reads in literature now in Gaelic.
Is that because it's part of his own ethnic background?
He's a polyglot. He loves learning languages, and he's also a linguist. And he's just one of those guys that can't get enough languages. So,
well, if he works crossword puzzles, he's my kind of
guy. Yeah.
The tuition fee is $100 per session, right?
No, it's $350 for the language in the morning and $100 for the methodology training in the afternoon. And if people register before the end of April, there's a $25 discount.
Okay, I got you.
And I guess the thing to point out is what testing shows us, and I've done the National Spanish Test that's given across the United States, to test how people are doing after 5 days, and they score almost about the same as high school students that have completed 1 year of high school Spanish. So the cost is very minimal. You get almost about a semester's worth of, or a college semester or a high school year in 5 days or in 20 hours.
Is it applicable either to your high school credit or your college credit?
Well, I'm going to apply for CEUs, and I'm working with local high schools to see how they want to do that. Some of them have written me and said that there is a deficiency for some of their students, and they would like to send them to the Language Institute to catch up. And how they decide to give credit, you know, is still to be decided by them.
Okay. Something that we talked about when the Director of Naval Intelligence visited MTSU and delivered a lecture at the invitation of the History Department is that the intelligence community still does not have enough people who speak Arabic and Farsi and other Middle Eastern languages. Could TPRS be a way of accelerating that process, either in civilian or military agencies?
Well, it's interesting. It's coincidental that you ask that, because the new graduate dean recently approached me about writing an earmark grant for the Department of Defense to fund the Language Institute with respect to military services. So I've done that. I've written a $2 million grant that's been, you know, placed before Congress. We'll see what happens. If we get it, the Language Institute will be addressing that particular area that you're talking about.
In the meantime, to find out more about the 2008 Summer Language Institute website?
The website, yes. If you simply type in acceleratedacquisition, all one word, .com, you'll get the website, and you'll get instructions on how to register for the Language Institute.
Or is there a telephone number they could also call?
Yes, if they'd like to call me directly in my office, 898-5757, area code 615-898-5757.
And your email address here is?
shthomas@mtsu.edu.
Dr. Shelley Thomas of the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures and the Summer Language Institute, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jenna.
This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please be sure to join us again at this same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure. Just go to www.mtsunews.com, and we're also available on iTunes.